You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I like what you did to the place, man.
This is usually there's just me in front of this antique thing. Now it's both of us.
Yeah.
Live from Arpin's dining room in NDG.
That's good.
Yeah.
So post trade deadline, a bit of a shocker at this point, because for all the talk that we heard about Jake Allen potentially being traded, The momentum had really gone down in the past few weeks, and it seems as though the information that had filtered was that the Canadians were more than comfortable waiting until the summer to trade Allen.
Yeah,
but they found a partner. Today Kent Hughes said we had talks with teams all season long, but it's only this week that we started filtering offers for Jake Allen. Mm. And the New Jersey Devils, I don't exactly understand what they're trying to do today, but they stepped up.
They did. They not only acquired Jake Allen, they acquired, according to Kevin Weeks, at least as we record this, they acquired Kaapo Kähkönen from the San Jose Sharks. So Jake Allen goes from one crowded goalie situation to another. But honestly, not the Canadiens' problem. I think this podcast would be way too long if we tried to explain what the New Jersey Devils are doing.
Yes.
But it's clear that they were trying to address next year's goaltending situation. They didn't want to go through another season like they just did. And the Canadiens were only happy. And I think the reason why talks had died down around Jake Allen, that the rumors had kind of gone down, is because the assumption was made that the Devils were out. They would want to wait till the offseason because they're out of the playoff picture. But the only hypothesis that I can kind of believe happened here is that the Devils didn't want it to get to the summer where more teams would be engaged. I think a number of teams mentioned to the Canadiens that if we do, you know, maybe we can revisit this in the offseason. It's not something that we can do now. We'd like to maybe look at it for next season. And so maybe the Devils just kind of jumped the market here. But in any case, the Canadiens alleviate their three-goalie situation. They get a pretty decent asset for it. They do have to retain money on Jake Allen next season, using their last retention slot. And really going into the deadline, the Canadiens' biggest asset was actually their retention slot.
they had to choose how they would use it.
Yes, exactly.
So they had basically three options. They could either use it on Allen. They could use it and in order to hope for any significant return, use it for Allen, use it for David Savard, or use it as a third-party broker. You know, they were to get involved and retain some money for I don't know. I always come up with the idea of the example of Jake Guentzel. But if Jake Guentzel had been traded to someone who needed another team to retain a significant portion of his salary, then the Canadiens could have stepped up. But the issue here is, as much cap space the Canadiens had, if they wanted to be third-party broker, there were other teams that had even more cap space than them and would have probably said, okay, well, this team will do it for a fourth. We'll do it for a fifth. It'll be fine. Like San Jose, Chicago, Buffalo, teams that have a lot.
Tampa, as it turns out.
Absolutely.
Tampa did it a couple of times this week. And I think the market price for that was about a fourth round pick. And so they got something better than that. So you're right in that they were going to use that retention slot in whichever way brought in the most value. The fact that it also allowed the Canadiens to alleviate their goaltending situation for next season and the rest of this season, let's not forget that Caden Primo is now going to get a little bit of runway to play more regularly than he has as a result of this. They get a third round pick that could turn into a second round pick, depending on, and Ken Hughes actually specified the conditions. It's if Jake Allen plays 40 games next season, which the chances of which happening just kind of went down with this other weird trade, but 40 games next season for the Devils and the Devils reach the playoffs, that pick turns into a second round pick.
Yeah, but Kekkonen is, actually it goes up because Kekkonen is becoming a UFA at the end of the year, whereas Vanecek has one more year in his deal. So right. they would have tried to find a way to play Vanecek and justify that he's on the payroll. It's an issue for Allen now because I don't know.
Honestly, well, that's fine for now. I mean, as far as the Canadiens are concerned, it's an issue for Allen. But for the Canadiens, they have a chance that Allen hits that target. Yeah. But still, they turned that retention slot into a third-round pick and they alleviated their goal tank. So out of all the scenarios that you played out, and I agree with you, those were the three options. They weren't going to retain money on Tanner Pearson because it would not have brought back anywhere close to the value that they got here. Of those three options, this was probably the one the Canadiens wanted the most because it kills two birds with one stone in the sense that it takes care of their goaltending situation. They get an asset for that retention slot. They do have to, and if they trade Savard, they'd still be retaining money on him next season as well. Pretty obvious based on some of the deals that happened today and even just this week. The first round picks were not flying around for players of David Savard's caliber, you know? And so, and I think the Canadiens were pretty firm on that. And Ken Hughes pretty eloquently mentioned why they value David Savard and why they value Jake Allen too. But, you know, that was, I think, a bigger problem. Having Jake Allen around for another year was a far bigger problem than having David Savard around for another year. And honestly, if David Savard plays out his contract and just leaves at the end of next season and nothing comes back, Ken Hughes mentioned they will have already gained value by having David Savard around their young group. And we've heard Caden Gooley talk about him, Arbor Jacki talk about him, any of the young defensemen on the team. There's a lot to gain for them to have David Savard around. So he's not one of those guys where you feel you have to recoup something because you are recouping something just by having him around.
And I think that the day seeing the Toronto Maple Leafs go after Ilya Libushkin and then after Joel Edmondson sent a pretty clear signal that whatever the Canadiens were asking for Savard, they were not willing to pay that price and they would rather get two guys that are probably ultimately inferior players, but at a much, much lower cost. It doesn't solve their problem. I still think that they would have needed, they had an idea of a type of defenseman that they wanted to add, but they went after two guys that are clearly third pairing guys. And one of them will probably be put into second pairing. I think that David Savard, even though he's not like a top shelf, top four player, he's still a guy that in terms of minutes played and the fact that he logs a lot of ice time, he can act as a second pairing guy and do a decent job. That surplus, obviously Toronto was not willing to pay it. And I'm not sure if there are other teams that were looking for right-handed defensemen, but probably a different type of offensive defenseman. If you look like at Colorado made those two spectacular trades with Byram going to Buffalo and they brought in Walker, they still wanted guys that were like dynamic and, you know, defensemen that were jumping the rush.
Yeah.
Savard was not, you know, fitting in that model.
He's not that. He is not that. And now, you know, who needs right shot defensemen now is Buffalo. So I think they have five lefties. Their top five young D are now, when they add Byram, are lefties. Samuelson's a lefty. Dahlin's a lefty. Power's a lefty. And the other one escapes me. But anyhow, that's besides the point. And I honestly believe now that, because I don't think, well, actually, as it turns out, the market wasn't as hot for David Savard as maybe the Canadiens anticipated. All season, we've been hearing about the right shot D market being having more buyers than sellers didn't necessarily turn out to be the case. You look at Matt Dumba goes from Arizona to Tampa along with a seventh round pick for a fifth round pick. So, you know, Matt Dumba's had not a great season and he's had a bit of a decline, but still a serviceable right shot defenseman who has, you know, had decent feet and is more of a defensive guy now than he was in Minnesota, but still an indication of what the right shot D market was for guys like that. And so obviously the Canadiens weren't getting a first round pick for David Savard at half price and kind of definitely move on. And I think, you know, did a good bit of business and really already got their first round pick from the Sean Monahan deal. And, you know, Kent was asked about it, but you look at some of the prices that went for some guys closer to the deadline, pretty shrewd of Kent Hughes to create kind of the urgency right as soon as Elias Lindholm got traded to Vancouver. Kent Hughes jumped into action and created like a mini deadline for Sean Monahan, you know, and wound up getting the price that he wanted for him by, I think, somewhat manufacturing a situation where Winnipeg felt that they had to act urgently and give up the price that Kent wanted.
But I remember that when the Monahan trade happened, we were wondering, had they held on to him for a bit longer, would they have had more? And the answer is no.
Yeah.
If Monahan had been in play this week, he probably would not have been able to fetch a first round pick because there were none to be given anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, no, it's just they weren't there. So that was the right move to move him at the time and make sure that he secured that asset, and the rest was just gravy. And but if we go back to Jake Allen, what do you? We both really enjoyed talking to him.
Yeah.
Really insightful guy, one of the most insightful Canadiens players that I've dealt with over the years. What will you remember of his tenure in Montreal?
Well, I remember there's two things that I remember. There's one is the quote that Marty St. Louis gave when he signed his extension, where you need guys who are willing to plant a tree knowing they won't get to benefit from its shade. Jake Allen did that. When he signed the extension, he said, you know, I'm here. He basically didn't use these words. I'm paraphrasing, but I'm here as a bridge. You know, I'm here to help the Canadiens get to where they want to go. And I know I probably won't be here when they get there, but I want to help. And so what happened since then? Sam Montembeau emerged. And I think that bridge became shorter. You know, it became not as long as the Canadiens and even Jake Allen had anticipated because Sam Montembeau was not part of the equation when he signed his extension. He emerged afterwards, and his impending unrestricted free agency this season created some urgency around, you know, getting him signed. And obviously his play on the ice created that urgency as well and made him the clear number one goaltender. And the guy that was happiest for Sam Montembeau was Jake Allen. I remember talking to him just after Sam signed. And in reality, in Jake's mind, he would have known right at that moment that he is likely to get traded. They're probably not going to trade Caden Primeau. He's a younger guy. The team is building towards something. He's closer to the age range of most of the players on the team. Sam just signed this contract. I'm probably on the way out. And so despite that, just spoke glowingly about Sam and his contract. Now he deserves it. Now he's a good person and good people should get rewarded in this league. Just went on and on and on, knowing full well that this means I'm probably out the door, you know? And so it took some time. It took, I think Sam signed that deal in what, December, if I'm not mistaken. After a podcast episode.
Yes,
yeah, that's right. Where I had to get you a beer. For the record, I did buy Marc Antoine a beer in Nashville.
Yeah, that's true.
I did do that. Yeah, checked off that debt has been paid. But that right at that moment, Jake Allen knew what was coming and total consummate pro. Ken Hughes told a story today about last season, how Caden Primeau was called out to Vancouver, arrived late, and the guy who met him at the hotel was Jake Allen and took him out for dinner. And so this is the kind of guy Jake Allen was and is, you know. And
even today, I mean, he was interviewed by TVA Sports, and he said really along the same lines of him, you know, not benefiting from the shadow of the tree that would have grown. Mm-hmm. He said, I thought that Sam has earned the right to play more. He needs mm-hmm. to play more. Give him three starts a week. Give him the time of the type of workload that will enable him to establish himself as an upper echelon goalie. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe that he deserves it. That's from my perspective. So even him, he said, okay, I'm part of that equation. It's uncomfortable. I don't like it. I'm biding my time and I'm very, very patient. Mm-hmm. But as much as he wanted to find another situation where he could build his game back, he also wanted Sam to be able to spread his wings completely, which was not a situation that was entirely possible with three goalies in the fold. But now that he's gone, do you think that – I'm not talking about starting a new three-goalie system next season, but I think that the Canadians should, in the offseason, make sure that they find themselves a third goalie who would be able to play in Laval, a veteran goalie, because if an injury happens to Montembeault or Primo next year, you're already down to Jakub Dobesz, and I don't think that this is something that they'll want to do. I'm not sure that the kid is ready for the big show just yet, so finding an older goalie who might be a nice insurance policy would be a good thing.
Well, I think just what they went through this season made that very clear, and I would be shocked if the Canadians did not do that, exactly what you just said, because what they went through in Laval, having Dobesz and Straussman having to play, and both neither of whom were ready for that. Dobesz came out the other side, and you know, it's been a very rocky rookie season for him as a professional, but I think there's certain things he gained from that experience, but you know, I mean, it was not easy and it was not ideal. You know, I think the Canadians have a certain amount of belief in Dobesz and his future, and they did not put him in the best position to succeed. So I have no doubt this is something that will be addressed in one way or another. Mm. There are always guys around who aren't able to latch on with teams. You can usually get them for pretty inexpensively towards the end of free agency. I have no doubt they'll do that. So, but it does at least this day clarifies the Canadians' goaltending situation for the short term, at least. Kane Primo has one more year left on his contract. Will be an RFA at the end of that with arbitration rights, if I'm not mistaken. Ken Hughes said something interesting today that I thought bears mentioning, is that how, you know, Kane Primo might have benefited in many ways from the three-goalie rotation, even though Primo himself grew frustrated at times because he'd gone long stretches without playing, justifiably too. And I think I don't think his behavior was a reflection of that frustration, but he definitely wouldn't lie when he was asked about it by reporters, you know, and would admit it, but, you know, did see the benefit of getting extra work with Éric Raymond, and definitely saw the benefit of being in an NHL environment instead of being in the AHL, which is where he would have been if he were waiver exempt. So that side of it was good for him. Seeing NHL shooters, getting his timing down against NHL shooters, even in practice, he thought was more beneficial to him than whatever he'd be doing in Laval, because he felt like Laval had, even though his numbers were not fantastic, he had learned everything he could learn in Laval. And if he ever wanted to become an NHL goaltender, he had to be in an NHL environment. So now we're going to see if that paid off or not. And now we're going to probably get a better idea of how Kaden Primo can play in this backup role, like the legitimate backup goaltender, where he would, if Sam gets 3 out of 4 starts, he's suddenly getting 1 out of 4, which means he's playing at least on a weekly basis, more regularly, can better predict when he's going to play, and gets a more normal workload, actually gets more reps in practice, probably doesn't get as much of that one-on-one time with Éric Raymond. I think the happiest person today might be Éric Raymond out of everyone, the goaltending coach for the Canadians, because I talked to him, I think it was in LA, and I was just curious. I was like, you know, how does having the three goalies increase your workload? Because you need to come up with not only the regular practice plan for the goalies, but also like a separate. And so he said sometimes, like when he would work alone with the goaltenders, he would actually create a specific plan for each guy that he would work on specifics for that guy.
That's more work.
That's a lot more work. So Eric Raymond, who did not, I unless I'm mistaken, did not get a raise when they went with three goalies, is now going to be doing the work that he signed up for, which is just to coach two goalies. So probably the happiest guy. But going back to Primo, what is your thought about his readiness? You know, I mean, obviously it's been so hard to judge him this season because he's played so sporadically. I thought he was really good in Tampa in that game. Helped the Canadians get a point there. The Canadians played well as well, but that's a tough test. Power play opportunities, things like that. I mean, you know, Tampa's not what they used to be, but they still have those guys. You know, they still have a Kucherov and a Stamkos and Point. And so I thought Primo played really well. And that's not the only time he played really well. And I was really impressed with his poise and and just his coolness. And it used to be that, you know, I found him to be kind of off positioning wise. I thought he slid around his crease too often in the past. I think he's cleaned that up a great deal. He's often square to the shooter. He's often there before he needs to be. And so it doesn't have to make these acrobatic saves and is not scrambling around in his crease. So what do you think is his, because now we're going to know what this guy's all about. What's your read on him?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
It's a lot more positive read than it was a year ago. There's no doubt about it. To me, there was a turning point in the season. Can't remember who it was. Which you might remember because you got a better memory than me. But there was a game where he gave up like five goals, glove side.
Yes.
And they went after it, and he completely mentally broke down in that period.
Yeah.
But
Pittsburgh? I can't remember. But anyhow, yeah. I remember the game, but I don't remember the opponent. Yeah.
Exactly. So it could have been a pivotal moment where, because that game, that third period in particular, because he had been decent in the first 40 minutes.
Right.
That third period could have been a pivotal moment in the season where, you know, he could have be the shaky version, younger version of Caden Primo we had seen in the past. But he rebounded in his next start. It didn't, you know, he doesn't play often, so that adds to the difficulty of being able to turn the page also and say, okay, I'm just shaking it off and let's move on to the next game. For him, the next game, I mean, at some point, he almost spent a whole month without starting a game. So it's a bit of an issue. But he came back from that and it didn't have any lasting effects. So his mental makeup, I find that he's done a really good job at fixing that and say, okay, well, there was one game that really things went really bad for me, but I can move past that. It's a little bit like that game in Vancouver from Montembeau. Was it last year or 2 years ago? Where, you know, it ended up being like a 7-6 crazy, crazy game.
Yeah, well, the Canadians got out to a lead and then they blew the lead. And yeah, that's the night that Sean Monahan got hurt last season.
So exactly, last season. So same thing for Montembeau. That game could have been, you know, things were going pretty well for him at that time. But after that, he built a stronger case for himself after that shaky performance. So I think that through very little workload, Primo really earned his credentials this season. And all his work away outside of games has really paid off. And that's surprising because at some point, you know, we hear Martin saying we talk about repetitions all the time. Well, it's the same for goalies. They need repetitions. And he has not been – the fact that he's been able to raise his level of play compared to previous years at the NHL level despite seeing so little action really shows how seeing NHL shots day after day really made the difference. So now, you know, what's his exactly his ceiling? I don't know. I think that we've made that point over and over again. Just you look at Montembeau, who would have thought, you know, I don't think that the Florida Panthers ever thought that he would become the Samuel Montembeau that we're seeing.
I don't think the Canadians ever thought that.
That's it. So we need time. And the Canadians, by trading Allen and keeping Primo, who's under team control for a number of years still, they give themselves a chance to say, okay, let's just see. Let's just play it out and see how good he can get. So it's a good – for a team that's rebuilding, they're at the right age. And you rarely see goalies that will – bide their time and stay inactive in the same organization. But eventually, they get their chance with that team. Most likely, they'll find it in a second destination.
Yeah.
But Primo stuck with the Canadiens. The Canadiens stuck with Primo. And now we're about to see what he's
doing. Well, Primo didn't have a choice. You know?
They didn't put him on waivers. There's no doubt that he would have preferred to be put on waivers and be picked up and have a chance to start as a backup somewhere in the league.
Yeah, for sure. And the Canadiens, you know, rightly didn't want to do that. Kent Hughes has repeatedly mentioned that, you know, with Montembeau unsigned, they couldn't afford to just lose Primo for nothing and then potentially lose Montembeau in unrestricted free agency and then just have Allen left on a rebuilding team. That wouldn't have made sense. But overall, I just want to, you know, kind of highlight some of the things that Kent Hughes talked about today, aside from the Jake Allen trade, which, you know, I think basically Kent Hughes executed essentially three trades, actually, if you include, yeah, Meshach for Jacob Perreault, who actually no one actually asked Kent Hughes about that, which was funny. But that was an attempt to go and bring in sort of a high ceiling talent, at least, that just has not blossomed yet and kind of, you know, let the development staff loose on this kid and see what happens in Laval. But the two primary trades that he made, you know, Sean Monahan was a case of really working with a group of teams in the aftermath of a deal that affected the market. And in the Allen trade, what I find interesting is, like, he's, you know, obviously the Devils traded Vanecek because they got Allen, but Allen was really the only goalie to get traded this year. I mean, like, there's – who else was there? I can't think of one.
Casey DeSmith,
exactly. But, I mean –
well, there was a Magnus Helberg that was traded. Yes. But that – I mean
among goalies who – yeah.
We're talking about third goalies.
That's it. Among goalies that are expected to play.
Yeah.
He managed to pull off – like, he was the one guy who had – most had to trade a goalie. He managed to do that and got not a garbage asset for it. Yes, he's got to retain money on Jake Allen. And really, you know, the third round conditional pick was compensation for the money, was really compensation for the retention more so than compensation for Jake Allen. I think had Jake Allen gone with no retention, fifth round pick, sixth round pick, I think it would not have been a very interesting return. But because they decided to retain, and as we mentioned earlier, they wanted to monetize that retention slot, they did so. But it's a case of, I think in both cases, but for different reasons, Kent Hughes was able to make the market work for him somehow.
What do you mean by that?
In the sense, in Monahan's case, I think, you know, and this is just my theory on it, but I think Kent Hughes saw the center market get impacted and pounced on it.
Yeah.
And got aggressive. And in Allen's case, he saw the goaltending market was not moving very quickly and teams were kind of shuffling in and out of interest and this and that. And he just bided his time and waited. And it paid off. In both instances, it paid off. In one instance, he convinced the Jets to give up the first round pick that he wanted. To prevent anyone else from getting the player that they coveted, and they clearly did covet him. And in the other instance, he sat back, he waited, and wound up getting the price he wanted for the asset he had. So in two different cases, using two different means, Ken Hughes got what he wanted.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. I probably didn't say it clearly enough, but that's what I mean.
Well, the goalie market, just like goalies themselves, the goalie market is voodoo.
Yes, it is.
Very hard to understand and predict. But it seemed as though you had like an upper tier of goalies that were in the rumor mill with, obviously, first and foremost, Markstrom. Mm-hmm. For a while, there was Gibson there. For a while, there was Saros until the Preds went on that tear. There were also discussions that Ullmark could be moved for the right asset by Boston. So you had those four goalies that were clearly superior to Jake Allen. They're number one goalies. Allen is not a number one goalie. But then that second tier, then you had other guys like Kakkonen, like potentially Reimer. Mm-hmm. So none of those goalies of the upper echelon moved. But you can think that in the offseason, there will be teams looking to improve at the goalie position. Then one of those guys, or more than one of those guys, might change address. And then if teams start looking for improve their goalie situation, you don't want to end up in a situation where Allen is just one among many, and you know it might be Allen or it might be another somebody else. It was a specific situation where Allen ended up being almost like the best one available out there.
Yeah.
So
I mean, not a massive cost. I mean,
well, exactly.
To get Markstrom out of Calgary would cost a fortune, right? So I mean, that's, and plus you're taking on a big contract with many years left on it. Allen, you know, for what? You know, I think we were all kind of puzzled that about New Jersey did. You know, the Allen trade broke like maybe a half hour after they traded away Tyler Toffoli to the Jets. But it's pretty clear that, you know, Jersey's looking at this season as an anomaly. And so they're kind of trying to prepare for next season, which makes you wonder why they didn't try to re-sign Toffoli. Maybe they did try and it didn't work. But
there was an issue with term.
Right. So it's again, it's hard for me to imagine that there were more than two teams in on, maybe three tops in on Allen, right? Jersey, probably Colorado, probably Los Angeles. Each of them, you know, to varying degree, who knows what each of them were willing to pay. But, you know, when Ken Hughes said offers were started coming in this week, he managed to get a lot for Jake Allen. You know, and that retention, I can't overstate that, but the retention is what I think he's being compensated for more than the goaltender. But still, to get potentially a second round pick for Jake Allen, but even if it winds up being a third, because the goalie market is voodoo, that doesn't happen that often. You don't get picks that high for goaltenders very often. And in fact, most goalie trades are weird. I think 1 year Fleury went for a first, if I'm not mistaken, as a rental. Do you know?
Yeah.
So that's also unusual. That's an anomaly. Most of the time, goalies go for nothing. They wind up getting picked up on waivers. It's just like it's a weird market to juggle. And I think Hughes did a good job of it. Not, you know, he could have felt, and he said it himself, when Sam Montembeau signed that contract, the pressure fell on me to alleviate the three goalie situation. So it took him 4 months to do it, but he did it, and he did it smartly. You know, he didn't rush into anything, and he was lucky that all three guys. Well, Sam, I don't think really needed to be overly patient with this thing, but really, Caden Primeau and Jake Allen accepted the situation for what it was, didn't create any trouble as a result of it, and just kind of accepted it, made the best of it, and. And now everyone comes out the other side. Jake Allen goes to a legitimately good team, a team that should have done much better this season than they did and might have a chance to be on a winning team next season, like a real winning team, a team like that could be a threat come playoff time, which is good for him. Caden Primeau gets the slot that he wanted. And Sam Montembeau is now the unquestioned – well, he already was, but is for sure now the unquestioned number one goaltender for the Canadiens, at least for the next 3 years.
I was sort of hoping that the Canadiens would find somebody to help out the Laval Rocket, like an AHL guy that they could just, you know, add to their to the Laval Rocket roster. Mm-hmm. It did not happen. It doesn't look good for them right now. They're falling behind in the standings. But today it was decided at 3:00. They papered Joshua Roy. They papered Jaden Struble too. It was interesting because during the trip, I think it was actually yesterday in Carolina, Arbor Jacki was asked about Laval, and he said, "That's for me, that's in the past.
Yeah,
that's just, I'm an NHL player. To me, that's in the past. It was just a bump in the road." So he was not papered. So you've got those two guys that represent the four, already two of the four regular call-ups that the Canadians are entitled to get or to use until the end of the season. But is there anything regarding the minor league, the AHL affiliate that you would like to?
There was
Jacob Perreault who was brought in for Jan Michak too. That's an interesting.
That could help the Rocket. I mean, he's not lighting up the AHL, but he's, as we mentioned, a talented guy. Canadians kind of, Jan Michak is probably the more likely of the two to actually carve out an NHL career. But if Perreault makes it, he'll probably be a more impactful player, more offensive upside. Just a matter of whether he makes it or not. Right now, he's trending to not. But I think, again, as mentioned, the Canadians view their development staff as being an advantage, and so they're gonna see if they can work with them. But the other thing about the Rocket is, I asked Ken Hughes during the press conference, and I admit this was a sneaky way to get an answer on something else. But I asked Ken Hughes during the press conference if, seeing as the Rocket making the playoffs is so important to the organization, were there any trades available today where you had to make a decision between either trading a guy and having to call someone up from Laval or deciding not to trade the guy and leaving that person in Laval? And basically this was a question about Tanner Pearson. And so he said that, yes, they had talked about that internally beforehand. Like, what do we do if, but ultimately that situation did not come up. So I take that to mean that they did not get any legitimate offers on Tanner Pearson. It's worth remembering, since they were committing their last retention slot to Jake Allen, any team that was going to acquire Tanner Pearson would have to take him at full price. He had roughly $700,000. He has roughly $700,000 left on his contract for the rest of the season. But still, not only is that a big hit for in such a cap-strapped league, you also have to compare that to the other players that were available at that price or less. Like the Rangers, for instance, got Jack Roslovich for not much of a return, but it's Jack Roslovich has some potential to maybe, score some goals and do some things in the playoffs. And those are the kinds of players, I guess, that teams were comparing Tanner Pearson with. I think the Canadians got some interest in Tanner Pearson in the past few days and weeks. There were teams asking, but it was probably going to have to be with no retention, and teams knew that. And I just, so the fact that that situation never presented itself tells me that the Canadians probably never got an offer on Tanner Pearson, not even an offer that they had to reject. Like, I just don't think there were many offers out there, which probably upsetting to Tanner Pearson.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is that there are teams, like, as they say on matching websites, yeah, teams that were curious.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
I don't know. They're curious.
But the point being is that Tanner Pearson staying means that the Canadians don't have to call up like a Lucas Condotta or a Mitchell Stevens or someone from Laval to take Tanner Pearson's spot in the lineup. They can just put Tanner Pearson there. Like, as he's been, and honestly, he's been playing fine. I think he's been playing well for a couple of weeks now. Marty St. Louis loves what he's doing and sort of went into detail of how, the little details of puck placement and angles he takes on guys, like things that are harder for, for us, mortals, hockey mortals to see, are more visible to someone, a savant like Marty St. Louis.
Well, so Marty, I asked him about Pearson, and Marty said, "I like the fact that he doesn't commit turnovers." And then in Carolina, it was like turnover festival one after the other.
Yeah. Anyhow, I mean, exactly. So that was another development today that probably didn't get talked a lot. And we should mention, David Savard, how relieved he must have been when it started coming out that the Canadians were done.
Yeah.
You know, last night after the game in Carolina, you know, he came out and did a scrum, and I was kind of surprised that no one asked about the fact that the deadline is.
He must have thought that it was coming.
He must have.
And like, okay, they're going to ask.
Yeah,
you,
that's it. Exactly.
What if this was the last game?
And that's exactly the face he would have made. And so when you guys all left, and you know, and all the, you know, it was all in French except for me, and I stayed, and I asked him a question about the game, anyhow, that's not important. And then at the end, I was like, you know, are you kind of anxious to get tomorrow out of the way? And he made that face. So, oh God, here we go. He's like, I've said everything I had to say about this.
Well, that's it.
I've made it clear. I don't know what else I'm supposed to say. I'm like, no, I don't want you to, I'm not asking you about that. I'm just, what's your anxiety level? Like, it's now, it's here. It's like, you've just played the game. You guys are heading home and tomorrow's the day. You're going to find out tomorrow once and for all. Are you looking forward to knowing or are you? And he's just like, he was just so done. Like you, I mean, you could kind of tell the anxiety was real. Based on everything he said, the impact on his family, how much he loves in Montreal, the dream of playing for the Canadiens, everything he talked about at length to, in his defense, 20 minutes in Nashville, talking about it constantly, didn't really feel like talking about it. But I think it showed that the anxiety was there, you know, like that the reality of the situation had hit. So I can only imagine, we're going to find out on Saturday. I'm sure we're going to talk to David Savard before the game. I can only imagine what he actually did when 3:01 Eastern hit on his phone or his watch or his clock in the house or whatever. I hope he and his wife, you know, did a little cheers,
oh, for sure,
you know,
for sure.
Something like that.
They'll have a nice glass of wine tonight.
Yeah.
So I hope you were entertained by this trade deadline. I mean, the Canadians were probably a tiny bit more active than at some point we thought they would be, just mm-hmm. by virtue of trading Jake Allen. There were fireworks around the league too, namely from Vegas. My God, those guys are entertaining. They're spectacular. But I'll leave you with this idea from Kent Hughes, who said, well, we might still be sellers at the trade deadline, but he sees the Canadians as buyers when it comes to draft time. It was that way 2 years ago. It was that way last summer. I think that there's a firm intention also for the Canadians to take a step forward by adding some fresh blood and some quality assets this summer too. Mm-hmm. So I think that they kept the expression, a lot of people like to say, keep the powder dry. I don't know how much powder they really had to use up this time around. But that draft capital, I look forward for them to bring those fireworks and bring to Montreal one or more interesting players in the summertime.
And the one thing about the draft is the Canadians did not, with all due respect to Jake Allen, did not get objectively worse today, which they could have had they traded David Savard, had they traded Tanner Pearson. Trading Jake Allen, while it hurts them, they have a very capable replacement for him already on the roster. So in terms of people hoping that the Canadians would slide down the standings after the trade deadline, they might do that because the schedule is very difficult for them, but they did not get worse.
No, you're right.
On deadline day. So what you see is what you get. And based on the quality of play over the last road trip, you know, competitive game in Florida, probably the toughest team in the league right now, competitive game in Tampa, win in Nashville, and 40 minutes of competitive hockey in Carolina. Pretty darn good trip. Let's see if they can keep that up. But, you know, Team Tank, probably not a good day for Team Tank to this trade deadline.
Have two glasses of wine, yes, guys. Okay?
Team Tank, yeah. You might want to have a shot of something, too, on top of that.
All right, so we'll be back on Monday. Don't forget to send us your questions for our Monday mailbag at basuandgodin@gmail.com. That's our email address, obviously, and on Twitter at basuandgodin. Regular programming back on, next Friday, we'll touch on some prospects mm-hmm. for our future Friday.
Yeah,
and
we'll know by then when David Reinbacher's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's there's plenty to talk about regarding that situation. So thanks a lot for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.